Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct
answers. How the hell did you get all this
together?
And
you go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, the Australian film program that you all wait for with bated breath on 3CR, your community radio station. Today we're going to hear from two filmmakers, Sean Dobra from Depression with Love and Zev Howley, The Man Who Saw Them Arrive. They're both films that are going to be shown at the upcoming Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. The Melbourne Documentary Film Festival this year is online from the 1st to the 31st of July and in cinema at the Nova from the 7th to the 19th of July. So a select program of films get to be shown on the big screen. And but you'll be also be able to tap in online throughout the whole month of July. And as I said, today we're going to have a yarn with two of the filmmakers, and over the next few weeks we'll be able to also hear some more filmmakers. It's a very diverse program, so it's a highly interesting sort of affair. But before we get on to the main meat and potatoes of the program, an important message.
Make your donation during our annual Radiothon and help us celebrate 50 years on air.
Donate to the 3CR Radiothon fundraiser this June.
To donate, call 0394198377 or go online at 3cr.org.au.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Can you believe it? 50 years. And of course, you can come to the birthday party on July the 4th at Collingwood Town Hall. I think it starts at about 11 and it goes throughout the day. Very exciting. You as listeners are the integral part of the whole affair. So we'd love to see you there, and you'll see a whole lot of the presenters, all the people who work diligently, a huge array of people over the many 50 years, as well as the ones who are here right at the moment. Let's get on with business. Sean Dobry has made a film called From Depression with Love, and it's a very heartfelt documentary that explores the issues of depression and ways and means to resurface from said illness.
Nice to meet you again, Sean. This is another film of yours, which is From Depression with Love. It's going to be screened at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. You have developed your technique of melding theatrical dramatisation with documentary style. Do you want to talk about that to me with this new film?
Yeah, it just seems that I have a real love for acting and drama and storytelling. And so, and also have a love for getting out information and education to people that's going to make a difference to their lives. So without actually planning it, somehow those two just came together. And now, you know, the last two feature documentaries that I made have both been docudramas, which means they've had acting involved in them and a storyline involved in them as well, a written story.
Yeah, that's right, which is really compelling. Depression is obviously a very big issue for many people. Can you tell me about the research process that you undertook to be dealing with such a big subject?
Yeah, well, first of all, I read quite a number of books. I had my own issue with depression and I had my own transformation. So then it led me to reading a number of books, and then having my discovery I went on to talk to a lot of doctors and professors and things like that. I did a lot of research on the internet to see how bad depression actually was, especially in Australia. You know, and at that time, I think it was 1 in 10 people were on medication, on some sort of pharmaceutical medication. And depression was the highest killer, you know, one of the highest killers of men, young men.
Tell me about the writing process, because I know that there's, in this particular film, you make sure that people are aware that this isn't a film that tells you to do particular things or come off medication. It's actually putting forward some processes that people have found helpful. And you've also spent a lot of time talking to people with lived experience who have found methods to bring themselves out of a very dark place.
Yeah, well, actually, the film itself was a bit of an education process, because the film was supposed to just be a short film. In fact, I do have still on YouTube, which I haven't released, a 4-minute version of the short film that we made. And when we were interviewing some of the professors and the doctors that are in the film, because they were in the early interviews for the short film, we just realized that there was so much more here, so much more information needed than what was just in a short film, especially when you're dealing with such a severe topic and also bringing up an issue that could be slightly controversial. And as you said, it's not to try to make anyone do anything different, but or just to educate people before they may make that decision for people in the future.
The lived experience of people who have found their way out of the dark place. One of the key elements for people is to realize that it's not going to be like this forever. I mean, people talk about it quite clearly, their genuine experience of it.
Yeah, and that really is the key message, because when someone's in a state of severe depression, often they're just looking at this moment, and this moment where they feel this pain is their entire life. And if you get too caught up in that moment and think that that moment's going to last forever, in that moment, it does kind of feel like it's going to last forever. You forget, and then you can do, you know, all sorts of crazy things. But if you have the realization and just the understanding that, hey, this is actually okay that you're like this, first of all, you don't have to fight it. It's just a feeling that you're in, and it's temporary, and it's a part of a process of life. Once you just have that mindset and that understanding, and with that other mindset to keep moving forward, it actually doesn't have as strong a hold. Because often one of the biggest problems that I've seen, especially with the people that I interviewed and other people during research process, is that it's the thinking that something's wrong with them that amplifies the depression.
How did you get the people to speak to you about this?
Well, I just found people that I thought would be good to be able to talk on this topic, people that either had lived experience, severe lived experience, or people that were actually in the field of actually dealing with this kind of thing every single day. So I just approached those people, called them up, had a conversation, enrolled them into doing it. And to be honest, I didn't really have any knockbacks. I think people are happy to contribute to a conversation like this, knowing that it's going to be seen by people and it's going to make a difference in those people's lives.
I mean, you decided to use the drama of a young man trying to deal with losing things that are supposedly the markers of success. Society has a lot to play in people's misunderstanding about their role as humans, really, doesn't it? That's one of the things that you're talking about in this film, isn't it? People's self-worth.
Yeah, and actually, I'm now writing a book as well called The Cocoon, also called From Depression with Love, but it's got a pre-title, The Cocoon, that also heavily talks about this being one of the key factors of causing depression is this idea that we have to be something more than what we already are. And that's what capitalism and society drives into us. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because it keeps us always moving forward and keeps us growing. And a part of life is growing. But when you feel so separate to who you want to be, and Tim Thomas in the documentary as a breathwork coach talks about this, and he says that there's the life that you want and then where you are, and the difference between the two, that's the amount of depression and negativity that you feel. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because that can be a driver. But also, if you can kind of get that, hey, life is a process, it's a journey. You're not necessarily meant to be here, but it's a ride from moving closer towards your desires. That can really relieve a lot of people from their depression. But with the actual story part, to be honest, the documentary itself was finished at about, it was about 45, 50 minutes long, without any story, without any acting. And I'd got an edit and a cut done. And I found that the film was a little bit too heavy in terms of information. And there was no real gaps and breaks. It's just information, information, information. And I'm just thinking the idea was for people who are struggling to watch this film and get some insights.
You mean they'd and be I more thought, depressed afterwards?
Maybe. Well, I mean, like, you know, who wants to sit through a heavy load of information when you're kind of struggling? But if you add an element of story and break it up a little bit, it gives you some breathing room to actually digest the information that's coming through the experts and through the people who have experienced and gone through depression, come out the other side, who are now living joyful, joyful lives. But dare I say, they still have, you know, I still talk to many of them, or I'm in contact with many of them. And I know that they still have their ups and their downs. So it's not like it's all joy. But I do think that that's a place that you can get to.
Well, it's one of the things about the film, isn't it? It's a journey. There's two really important things in it. One is the that it's a process, but also human contact is incredibly important, like making contact with people. That's what that story is about, really, is it actually being... Humans are social beings and we need to make contact with each other.
Yeah, 100%. I guess that's one of the real things about someone who's really stuck in a state of depression as well, is even though they might be in contact with people, they feel isolated. They're not necessarily sharing their true selves. They're hiding behind because they want to be something else. They project something else and they don't share their true self. And actually, like, you know, if you can get one message across to someone, it's that who you are is actually beautiful and perfect just as you are. And you're worthy just by the very fact that you've got breath in your lungs. Like, there's a purpose and a reason for you being here. That's why you're alive. Life has given you this gift because you're worthy of it. And out of this life, it doesn't really matter what you do, to be honest. It doesn't matter. It's just a choice. We're just here to play and have a little bit of fun. And even if we're experiencing depression and pain and suffering, that's okay, because that's life is like a movie that has some drama and has some downsides, some real pain and real struggle is a very interesting movie. I'm not saying that you can't have a joyful movie and a fun movie too, but if you start to look at your life as a movie, it's in a way you can even view it as a good thing.
Someone actually says that in the film. She actually says that I'm the best version of me. I'd do a terrible job being you. In fact, she says it really well.
I should be learning.
Yeah, and what the other thing that she says, which is really important, and I think people will have experienced this if they've been to a general practitioner, that general practitioners quite often will give a person who goes in to see them, if they're feeling down, immediately a script for a medication, which is supposed to help them work through whatever it is that they've got going. The thing is that people actually do have problems. They actually do have issues which they need to work through, not to be shielded from. They need some kind of support rather than a medical intervention, which is an interesting aspect to this film, I'll have to say.
Yeah, well, I think this is like, you know, this is part of the, one of the reasons, you know, I was initially wanting to make the film is, when I was going through depression and even speaking to people after I came out of my depression, you know, I noticed that the general thought in a lot of people's minds were, oh, if you're depressed, if you've been depressed for a couple of days, go get some medication. And also that often doctors are heavily pushed to, if someone comes in with a state of depression, because of their safety procedure, they've got to hand over that medication pretty quickly because they don't want someone to come in there and then go out and then do something bad and say that they didn't do the proper procedure, which is giving medication. And medication comes with a lot of side effects, inflammatory problems. It can also cause even worse mental health problems. It can cause you to put on weight, which can then also, for some people, that can add to their depression. It has a lot of side effects, which isn't really talked about. It's more just, you know, get on the pill. And I wanted people to be aware of, like, you know, the pill is there and it's a great emergency support for people who are just like completely lost it and there's no other choice and that they just feel that they really need something to cope. But for a lot of people, there are so many other tools that have positive side effects that they should really be exploring first for a period of time and really using the medication, which has negative side effects, as a last resort. And if you have to, you know, if you have to use it as a last resort, there's no problem. It's another great tool and support. I just think that it's And as the doctors in the film mentioned, it's just too quickly subscribed.
It's a growing experience, if nothing else. Have you shown this film to other people?
Exactly right.
It's going to be in the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, but have you shown it to other people, and what have there been their reactions?
Not a lot of people have seen, especially not this version. As I said, originally that was a documentary with no drama attached. So it's been upgrading and upgrading and upgrading and upgrading right up until last year. And it's just like a never-ending process, you know, especially when the documentary was entirely self-funded. The few people that have seen it have loved it and can't wait for it to get out there and can't wait for it to start. Just get the conversation rolling and also get the insights out there that can make a difference for people. You know, because the truth of the day is, while we're having this conversation, there's a lot of people out there struggling, and the more tools that become available to them or the more understanding they have about it, the more it can help relieve that struggle and that pain and get people in, as you said, in the growth process. Because once you exit that stagnant stage and you get into the growth process and you start kind of growing and slowly improving and making, you know, little changes in your life, depression starts to disappear. And, you know, even like Tony Robbins, the famous motivational speaker, you know, he says progress equals happiness. You know, so when we're moving forward, it doesn't matter what area that is as well. You know, there's many areas to progress on. You can progress on your health, your relationships, your spirituality, your finances, your career aspects, your business, if you have one. But if you're growing in that area, you feel happy about it. And I think when you feel connected, when, you know, you're having conversations with people and you actually feel the person, you feel nature, you feel life, you feel whole and complete.
When is it screening at the Documentary Film Festival? Do you know?
It'll be screening on the opening night, which we're very happy to be put on the opening night, on 7th of July at 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m.
Thanks for talking to me, Sean.
No, I loved it. Thanks, Annie. Good to speak to you.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Have a good day.
You too. See ya.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are, at home, work, driving,
on public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're with Annie on Showreel, and we've been talking to Sean Dobry about his film The Depression, From Depression with Love, and we're now going to go on to another filmmaker that's made a film that's going to be shown at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, Zev Howley. The film The Man Who Saw Them Arrive is all about UFOs, from the sublime to the ridiculous, or the ridiculous to the sublime.
Hello, Zev, and your latest film, The Man Who Saw Them Arrive. It's all about UFOs or flying saucers.
That's correct. Yes, it's a very interesting story about Colin Cameron and what he experienced in 1968, sort of witnessing a UFO land and subsequent what happened to him after that, yes.
So how did you get to be making this film? Because you do it in collaboration with a person who was a friend or a relative of Colin's.
That's correct. I met Andrea, and she's Colin's cousin. How I met her is a bit of a sort of a coincidence. I met her at a talk in Q where she was talking about Colin to a group of people, and sort of like it was a bit of an event, and she had that going in the Kew Library and had a whole group of people listening to her story. And in the break, I got a hold of her and we started talking, and she elaborated more about his story, and I was fascinated. And I thought, well, this would make a great documentary. So we sort of started having meetings and planned it out. Within like 2 or 3 months of that meeting, I started working on a documentary and filming interviews. Yeah.
Yeah. So the UFO, I mean, the film, it doesn't just talk about Colin's story. You actually bedded in some research around the whole phenomenon and how it interacted in the Australian consciousness, but also a bit broader. So can you explain to listeners a little bit about your research process?
Yeah, so the man that saw them arrive is sort of, it begins with Colin's journey and his individual experience, but it also dwells into the broader subject matter of the UFO phenomenon, particularly here in Australia, where, you know, you've had quite a lot of sightings, quite a lot of incidents. And also I've spoken to UFO researchers and sort of touched on other sightings and events as well. One of the most prominent features in this documentary are the Westall witnesses, who three or four of them tell their story and what they saw in 1966, which is quite compelling. So I've got that in there. I've got Bill Chalker, who talks about his book, Hair of an Alien, which is really, really fascinating story about Peter Curry and the fact that they found evidence of a so-called species hair on the body of Peter Curry. That's really fascinating story. And George Simpson also has his own story with Nothing on Radar, the Valentich mystery, which is about a pilot who disappeared in the 70s. So it's really quite a broad documentary, as well as telling Colin's story, yes.
And you talk about Bill Chalker. Bill Chalker is actually a scientist. And so he brings this a certain amount of gravitas to the situation, doesn't he?
Absolutely. He's a very well-renowned ufologist, and he's a scientist as well.
He approaches it in that sort of way, doesn't he?
Yes, he approaches it in a scientific way, and he absolutely believes that there's something out there, and, you know, there's something that's we can't explain, and there's evidence to the fact that there is something out there that we don't know about. And he explains it very well, yes.
You concentrate on Colin Cameron because, of course, the impetus was his cousin's talk. But it really took a hold of Colin, didn't it?
That's correct. After one night walking along Kew Boulevard, he said he witnessed a UFO land and subsequent contact as well. And after that night, he wasn't the same person. He did suffer from mental health problems after that experience. And as his cousin stated in the documentary, you know, he was fine. He was, before that incident, he was working, he had a job, he had his career. But just after that night, everything changed. So I truly believe something did happen that night, and it's a real mystery. And I think the fact that he had suffered this kind of mental collapse, a mental collapse, or is testament to the fact that something did happen. Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting to me is the phenomenon went from being flying saucer to UFO, because unidentified flying object is a less specific term, isn't it?
That's correct. Well, now they call them UAPs. So the term has changed over the years, obviously.
What does UAP stand for?
Unidentified unanimous objects or something, UAP.
You're right. Yeah, it's called an unidentified anomalous phenomenon.
Yes.
As in unidentified, yes. Not sure what it is.
Bit of a mouthful, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. But yeah, as I said before, now it's all over the media, and the American government have released a lot of files, videos and photography of all this topic, and it's really heating up now.
Why do you think the sightings that you talk about all seem to have happened at a particular time in Australian consciousness, like it's 66, 68, early 70s. It's around a particular time. Was there any reason, do you think, that might have happened?
Look, I'm not altogether sure, but definitely late 60s, early 70s was a real, a lot of sightings happened during that time, as Bill Chalker stated in his interview. A lot was going on. Now, we don't know why those sightings happened, but there was quite a few. There was Westall in 66, and in 68 there was Colin Cameron's story, and there was a sighting in Baldwin as well, and Kew, and around Clayton. It was also, it seems all kind of linked to me. I
Well, yeah,
mean that.
that's why I asked the question. The other thing is that you're talking about, is Westall the one about the kids at the school?
That's correct. Yes, that's correct.
That's a
Yes.
wild story, isn't it?
That's right. And that's been catching on too. They were on Australian Story recently talking about their experiences. That is a wild story. The fact that there were so many witnesses to that event, you can't dismiss it.
But
It's
also the aftermath, which was official, them saying, you're not allowed to say anything about this.
Yeah, that's right.
That was
The army
curious.
officials, men in black, they all came, and tried
Very
to.
curious indeed.
Yes. So it's that's quite an event, And it's similar to what happened in there was an event in Zimbabwe and an event in Brazil as well, with the one in Zimbabwe were a whole lot of school kids as well. So I mean, it's clear that there's obviously something out there that we don't know about,
Did you have any particular challenges making this film, Zev?
The challenge for me was to be patient with it because it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. As I was doing the research, the topic became bigger and bigger and more people got involved. So the challenge for me as a documentary filmmaker was to be patient and just go along with the process and do it step by step without thinking too far ahead. That was the main, because it's all very well to get very excited, but you can lose yourself in the process if you get too far ahead of yourself. So I always maintained a relative calmness to the whole project because I didn't know what was going to happen next.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was it grew and grew and grew. Yeah.
Also, how did you get the older footage?
Well, Cameron kept footage on DVDs we had from Andrea. She showed them to me. So there's actual footage of UFOs spinning in the air, which were from his DVDs. There's footage of dots in the air going very fast 1 minute and then coming up and then disappearing. There's that footage. There's photographs. There's video footage of the actual burnt circle in Kew. There's video footage of people investigating the burnt circle in Kew. There's a lot of documentary evidence to suggest that this event, something happened. There's a lot of documentary evidence I've got in this film. Yeah.
So this film's going to be shown. The Man Who Saw Them Arrive is going to be shown at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival.
Yes, on July the 18th at 8:30 p.m. And it's another film is following that. Another science fiction film, the Belgian Triangles. So it's going to be a full-on event. And not only have I got the documentary, I've got the musician who wrote the title song at the end. He's going to be performing live as people coming in. And I've possibly got a sort of retro style stall being set up in Brunetti's as well for people to look at. So I'm trying to make this a bit of an event. Yes, yes.
Okay, thanks very much for talking to me today, Zeb.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Today was okay. Tomorrow's another day, so they say. Anyway, yesterday's gone. and all along. You gather up regrets, mistakes along the way. Couldn't count my mistakes, couldn't count my mistakes on my fingers if I had.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.